Accession number 13358 to Harry Wilkinson, Rail 1.
Mr. H. Wilkinson, Rail 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Wilkinson?
At the little place called Flint's Yard in Richmond, Yorkshire, in 1920.
What was your date of birth?
18th of May, 1920. I was christened at St. Mary's Church, in which is a chapel to the Green Howards, and rather an interesting backdrop. It's a platoon coming out of action with an officer and one or two bandaged and the lame being helped along and the stragglers looking really battle-worn and weary, and it was done by Mousie Smith, and all the furniture there has its little signet on the little mouse.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I had a brother 3 years younger than me. He died last year. A year about as now. I think it's July, actually. So it's not far off.
Mm. What did your father do for a living?
He was a bricklayer, foreman bricklayer. His father had a building business of his own. And there was about, what, four or five sons. I'd be five, and I think there was four sisters. And they lived in a house at Setchfield, just near the parish hall. And there's big double gates at the side of this double-fronted house. And he went up the cobblestones, and he had on the right an orchard, and immediately in front there was a set of stables and workshops. And he used to travel to work by pony and trap him, and he had worries for doing the leading. And he used to also breed horses for the war and for the army, really.
Just for the First World War?
Yes, for pulling the gun carriages. Mm. Yes.
Did he serve in the First World War?
My father did, yes, right through with the KOILI. Mm. He was never wounded. He was in action nearly all the time. And he went down with blood poisoning towards the end of the war. It was a Christmas time. While everybody else was getting all the best in hospital, he was getting fed cabbage water, which was seemed to be the antidote to blood poisoning in those days. he told me that much.
In the times, were you then a relatively well-off family?
Well, times were hard, but there was some a lot worse off than we were, and then there was some better off. But when we moved to Ferry Hill...
When was this?
We moved from Richmond to Setchfield for a spell, and my father was working for a firm called Lazenby's at Ferry Hill, and we eventually moved to Ferry Hill when I was 4 year old, to Eldon Terrace, 13 Eldon Terrace. And there was quite a lot of miners in the street, and a goodly lot of railwaymen. Mm. And the miners, mostly adjacent to where we lived, they were only moderately off. Some of the railwaymen were better off than others. It just depended what grade they were, whether they were station porters or what have you, you know, or signalmen or engine drivers, especially if they were engine drivers on express trains. Well, they weren't so badly off. And then that declined, and they dispersed a lot of the railway people that I knew to York and Middlesbrough and Doncaster. After that, I lost contact with quite a few of the people I knew.
Was it a closely knit community?
They were always very helpful to each other. I mean, if you left your front door and your back door open, nobody came in. Unless, if you came in the house and you saw anybody, it was to return a cup of sugar, or maybe to give a hand somewhere. You know, maybe somebody was having a baby, they'd come along and help, like unofficial midwives. I used to ride on the footplate quite a bit with a chap called Chapman. He lived about four doors along from where we lived. And if I had none of the pals around after school, I'd go down to the engine sheds and look around there a bit, you know. And invariably, he was on evening turn doing shunting, because that line was very busy all the time. Trucks coming from the quarries and the couriers and had to be shunted about. If there's no one around, he'd say, hop on the footplate, Harry. If you see anything coming, bob down. But I enjoyed myself with that chap. He had quite a few in family.
Did your mother work?
No. No, she was supposed to have poor health. And she just was more or less at home, housewife.
Did you find that the family income, you could make ends meet quite easily?
Well, as far as I knew, we were never short of a crust. And we always had a cloth on our back and a pair of shoes. Mind, that wasn't so with everybody, because I remember lads, the older lads at school, carrying younger ones to school on their backs because they had no shoes. Plus the fact, during the 26th strike, there were soup kitchens in the schoolyards. Yes.
Were you able to afford an annual holiday?
No, I wouldn't say that we did. Not as a family. But invariably we got 2 or 3 weeks during the month's summer holiday spent at Richmond at my relatives.
When did you start school?
At 14. I finished school on the Friday, and my dad came in from work on the Saturday dinner time. He threw a little brown paper parcel at me. He says, there's a present for you, Harry. I said, oh, yes. I said, what is it? He said, open it and see. It was a pair of brown overalls. He says, you're with me on Monday morning.
Which schools had you gone to before you started?
The station school, what they called the Crag School, and then I finished at the Broome School over here.
Both in Ferry Hill?
Yes, both in Ferry Hill. I did no secondary education.
Did you like school?
School was split. Well, in the beginning, I wasn't so sure. Then I just accepted it, and I suppose I was just average, really. I was no great shakes, but improved myself a bit.
What was school discipline like?
As it should be now. I mean, in those days, you respected your teachers, particularly your headmaster, the policeman, and the kiddie catcher, plus your parents, because if you got into trouble at school, you got into trouble at home if they found out. And I think the world would be a better place today for the same discipline. It's all gone to pot since the war. In my opinion, folk were too ready with two in family working, come on the weekend, they'd fob money out to the kids so that they could get time on their own. And I think family discipline is where it starts, and it should have continued through the school, and it should have continued into the army's conscription. It would have done nobody any harm.
Do you recall any of your teachers particularly?
Well, I can place one or two of them, yes. Mr. Stringer was the headmaster at the station school. And there was a Mr. Thompson. I think he came from Darlington. He was a stocky little chap, but he was a good disciplinarian. And he was looked up to, mind. You did what was right, otherwise you got wrong. As simple as that. And another chappie was a little fella called Mackie Smith. And he had a little bit of a tash, and he was not quite as stocky as Thompson. But he was quite strict. None the worse for it.
What form did discipline take?
What form did it take? Well, you didn't get all your spellings wrong, right, you got wrong. Simple as that. And it depended to what degree your spelling was how many strokes you got, and it learnt your spell.
This was being caned.
Yes. And then he untoward mischief or impudence, well, he got all the more. Fortunately, I kept my nose clean. I thought, well, why ask for it?
So you got on pretty well with your teachers?
I got on pretty well with everybody, as I have done more or less all my life.
You have no problem taking discipline?
Well, they say, Harry, that to be able to deal discipline out, you've got to accept it. And that's the way I looked at it. It was the same in the army. I mean, once or twice I was asked to take a stripe, and I refused, because I had mates, and I thought, oh, well, I'll be lording it over them, and I don't want to put it on. So I just kept clear of it.
You say you left school when you were 14.
14, yes.
That would be 1934.
Four, that's right.
And you started work with your father.
Yes.
What were you doing?
Apprentice McLaren, stonemason. Well, stonemasonry was a thing that came on later. But initially it was bricklaying. Then the two became combined because the firm I worked for, it built quite a lot of churches, and it also built cinemas and hospitals where sometimes the front was in stone or fancy brickwork or both.
Was it quite heavy work?
Yes, heavy and dusty.
Mm-hmm. You're not very tall. What height are you?
Well, are you asking now or when I joined up?
When
I joined up, I was 5 foot four and a half. Now, I'm 5 foot two. Yeah, the old bones are shrinking.
But you manage the heavy work, obviously.
Strangely enough, yes. It's something you built up. The more you worked, the harder you worked, the bigger your appetite when you came home in the evening. And you began to find that you got muscles where you hadn't any. And the bricks in those days were 9 pounds. Now we're about 7. I doubt whether some of them's even that. They have that many holes and slots through them, I wouldn't call them bricks. And you had to learn to spin them, and you had to learn to lift 100 weight, until even as small as I was, I could lift 16 stone, believe it or not. Looking at me now, they're all gone. Yeah.
Was it very skilled work?
Bricklaying, oh yes, uh-huh. Yes.
You had to go through an apprenticeship?
You did 7 years in my day. I started off at 5 shillings and 4 pence a week, and that was working all through the week till 5 o'clock, and then till dinner time on a Saturday. And many a time you had to wait half an hour or an hour before they came round with your pay on a Saturday.
What time did you start in the morning?
Had to be on the job for 8 o'clock. And it was up to you how you got there. Well, when I first started, I was travelling to Bishop Auckland. And we were building garages at the post office in Tentus Street, Bishop Auckland. And I was biking there. We were on a bike on a morning, about maybe just before 7:30 to get on the site, just before 8 o'clock. And then leaving at 5 o'clock, cycling home. Yes, later on I went from there to Doggett's in Bishop Auckland. There's quite a job on there. I won't go on to that too much. But come the end of that job, we moved on to Bishop Auckland Grammar School. And we started building a new grammar school for the boys there. And that meant that I was leaving home with my books and my saddlebag, a bit of extra bait. When all the others had gone home, I was still in the cabin, having a snack, a bite to eat, and getting a wash. Taking my overalls off I had a reasonable suit underneath, and then going into night school. And then that many a time meant I was getting home at 10 o'clock or half past 10. And that was cycling home all weathers, because the night classes came on towards the autumn, as you know.
How many nights a week was this?
I think it was three. We had one early-ish night and two late-ish nights.
And these were all to get your apprenticeship, through your apprenticeship?
Well, no, actually, it was just to better myself.
Did you get annual holidays?
Well, to go away.
In your work?
In my work. Oh, you got to, I think it was a week's holiday then. Yes, a week's holiday.
Did you go away? Did you stay at home?
No, stayed at home then. Or maybe go with a cousin and we'd get the tent packed and we'd go to Whitby or somewhere like that and camp out. Did a lot of cycling and camping. Prior to that I'd been in the Scouts.
When did you join the Scouts?
Oh, let me see. It'd be about what? I joined it about 1927 to 1928, I should think.
Where were these based?
At the crag, next to the church. The church isn't there now.
Were the church a church scouting body, were they?
Yes, uh-huh. They had a hut, church hut beside.
Church did you get the uniform given, or did you have to buy it?
No, you bought it. But it was only coppers then, at least we thought, you know. It had to come out of somebody from somewhere.
And did you enjoy scouting?
I enjoyed it, yes, while it lasted. Mm-hmm. I always remember my father was foreman on the St. Aidan's Church on the corner of Chilton there. You'll have passed it many a time yourself. And when that was opened, we marched from Ferry Hill Station right through to Chilton. We thought it was the greatest kids. Marching there and marching back. Mm.
Did you have your own band?
Yes, there was, the Scouts had one or two bugles, I think, and a drum.
How did you take to the discipline of the training in the Scouts?
Oh, quite all right, yes. It was good fun. You learnt knots and one or two bits of things, you know, country-wise. And yes, it was good.
Did you get to any camps?
No, I didn't. There was some interruptions somewhere along the line, and I didn't make a camp, and then we moved up here. And I had to make new friends and what have you. And then I was more in contact with a cousin of mine. We used to go cycling or even walking, you know. We used to think nothing of walking 6 or 12 miles, even as young kids.
Did you get involved in the trade union movement at all?
Yes. When I came out, well, before I came out of my time, I joined the trade union, yes. The AUBTW, Amalgamated Union of Building Trade Workers. But I didn't play an active part, really. I paid my subs and attended one or two meetings. I never had a lot to say because there was a lot of them older and died in the wool and... The younger ones more or less had to take a back seat. You don't know what you're talking about, so so I didn't press any matters too much. But if we were having a drink at all afterwards, I'd chat and say what I thought. Whether it got to the right quarters or made any difference, I don't know. I don't think it did a lot.
Was it important to be in a union?
Well, it more or less had to be those days. Yes.
By that, do you mean that you wouldn't be able to work?
That's right, yes. It caused a lot of bother. Yeah.
And there were people who objected to this, did they?
Not that I really. There were more or less the majority were union members. You came across the odd one, and you could get into an argument with them occasionally. But as was said quite often, they were quite prepared to take any rises that the union fought for. So why didn't they join the union, instead of just shouting the odds from the sidelines? Mm.
As a growing young man and a working young man, did you get involved in politics?
No, no, I didn't, no. Because by then I had a garden and a greenhouse and my time was quite occupied. And I liked gardening, although I can't do it now. One time I had a double allotment and two greenhouses down here. But I had to give them up on account of being lame.
Did you receive any injuries in your early days of work?
Well, not till towards the latter end of my time. But we were working at Birtley Munitions Factories before the war. And we could tell there was something coming the way they were gearing up. And we were changing a lot of the floors from concrete to steel. A lot of the floors were made of steel perforated plates about a foot square with the tangs in them that went into the concrete while it was soft. And all had to be levelled, and that was one set of floors. And where the heavier stuff was, we're laying floors with the steel plates about a yard by 2 foot, as near as I can remember, and about an inch to an inch and a quarter thick. So that meant there was going to be something heavy in that quarter when it was going. And then one Saturday morning we were there, and we more or less completed the work inside the factories, and there was some railway lines to be got up onto this gantry. And this other chappie and I were on this windlass, and we were turning this, when this handle that we were on, that I was on anyway, was worn. And as we were on the downward stroke, putting all the pressure on it, the handle came off, and my thumb was between the handle and a piece of railway line underneath that the thing was mounted on. And I was in quite a mess with this finger. It cost me 7 weeks' work. It was in a state.
Did your pay go on whilst you were injured?
No, just sick pay. No, you didn't get your pay made up by the firm in those days. In fact, if you lost time, you lost money. And it was the same with wet weather or winter time. It wasn't until later after the war that we became on half time if you're off work through inclement weather.
So when it rained, you got no money?
That's right. You didn't work, you didn't get paid. Simple as that. And after the war, as I say, they brought half-time out on. When you were in the cabin, you got paid for that at half rate. And then they started this stamp scheme. You got a stamp card, and you got a stamp on for every week you worked. And then come the annual holiday, those stamps were turned into cash for you.
So during wet weather, hopefully you'd have an indoor or a covered job.
Yes, if you're lucky. Depending whether the roof was on or what was going inside.
Did you lose a lot of wages through wet weather?
On the whole, not really. Because at one time they used to build quite a few houses on spec. Or if there was a cinema going, you got inside there and there was quite a lot of bits and pieces you could get on with. But sometimes you're unfortunate. Well, we were building a church at Richmond on the corner of Queen's Road and Dundas Street. And it turned out to be a 2-year contract. And we finished the church more or less, and we had to start the assembly rooms and what have you on the end of it. And it was winter time coming on. It became that severe, the frost was that deep into the ground you couldn't get a pick into it. So we had to close the thing down and come home, and we were home for 7 weeks on the dole. We used to walk from the broom here down to Spennymoor dole office.
Do you recall
as soon as the weather got better, we were back to work again.
Do you recall what your wage, what money you were getting from the dole?
No, I can't, Harry, to be honest. Now, I know what wages I were getting from work. I started at 5 and 4 pence a week, and then it went to 6 and 6, and then to, I think it was 9 and 6, and then to about 14 bob. And I think it was about 21 shilling or something towards the end of the time.
And that was when you're getting near the qualification.
Yes, you're supposed to do a year's improvership.
Did you get involved with the territorials at all?
No, not whatsoever. I had no thought about the army at all. For all I'd worked in Richmond for 2 years, which was originally my hometown and army district, I was never bothered. But come the war, I was keen, because my father had joined up in the First World War in the KY Lies. And I thought, well, if he was fit enough and big enough to fight the First World War, I would be good enough for the Second.
What indications were there of war coming?
Well, it seemed to me to be about 1938. There was more air activity than usual, and particularly at night time. And prior to that, you hardly ever saw a plane. Maybe a civvy pilot messing about over here.
These were our planes?
Yes.
Planes.
There's a chap at Cornforth had a plane of his own. He was a butcher's son. I'm just trying to think of his name. I can't recall, but quite often he used to come round, fly round, and then land in a field close to his home somewhere. We always used to run about trying to see it. But the military aircraft seemed to come more prominent round about 38. In fact, I'd been working in my garden and greenhouse one evening, and I got a few thoughts, and I just sat down and wrote a poem. And that's it on the wall there.
As war approached, were there signs of defensive activity, sandbagging, this kind of thing?
Yes. We were building a few air raid shelters, and then we went down to the coast, round about Huff, the Huff Battery at Hartlepool, and we built a lookout tower there, and then we were farther down, actually more onto the coast itself. We're building gun emplacements and such as that. Mm. And I was in Hartlepool at that particular time. I'd gone from the site out onto town for some reason or other. I think it'd be about lunchtime. And all of a sudden there was a plague of rats came hell for leather down the street. And I had to step into a doorway, and they just seemed to fly past, hundreds of them, and then disappear. And then through that night there was a heavy raid. And when we went to work the next morning, there was bits of shrapnel and iron ore and bits and pieces from the railway laid about. And it was a week or so after that we heard that they'd found a woman's body on top of this hospital. It was quite adjacent. A woman in a fur coat, she must have been blown up and onto there.
What was the feeling amongst people that war was coming again, particularly the older ones who had been through the First World War?
Well, I don't know. It just seemed to be a strange sort of feeling, as though they could sense something, yet they didn't say a lot. And I think more or less when Poland was invaded, you heard more about it. You know, people were wondering what on earth church... what do you call him? Fellow with the top hat.
Chamberlain.
Chamberlain, that's right. What he'd been over there for in the first place. Been a wasted effort, wasted time, and what was going to happen, and God help everybody.
Was there a deep distrust of the Germans?
You mean prior to actual war being declared? Well, I think they more or less looked on them as they looked on them in the First World War, Harry.
Mm. Do you recall what you were doing the day that war broke out, as the announcement came?
On the Sunday morning, yes. We'd come home from Richmond, from that church job that I was telling you about, And sometimes the firm had a bit of a meeting, what we call the yard at the station. There's his offices and such. And my father and one or two more was gone down. And we'd come out of there and we'd called in the Eldon Arms. There were half. And it came over that war was declared. So my dad looked at me and I looked at him and he said, "It's here, lad."
What were your feelings, your own feelings, at that time, that moment?
At that moment? Should I say rather apprehensive, because I'd never been in uniform, and yet I was willing to fight for my country. I wasn't going to let the side down. All his brothers had been, no, I'm saying, his three, the three elder ones of the family, which was my Uncle Tom. He was a gentleman farmer and builder and contractor. Then there was Joe. He'd been in India in the army. And my father had been in the Coilies. They'd been in the war. The two others were too young to join up at the time, because there was a little bit of space between those three and then the sisters that had been born.